B-Pod Studios.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
For us, it's not necessarily about the team that we're facing. It's just about us and accepting the challenge of, you know, saying we haven't played a turnover-free game yet. Let's see what that looks like. It's more or less saying, like, let's get back to, you know, getting into a weekly routine. So for us, it's not necessarily the team that we're playing, more or less, than our preparation going into the game and executing it, you know, when given the chance.
We in the streets, player, get your mail. It's only two places you end up, either dead or in jail. Still know where to go, know where to go. Still know where to go.
I believe this is one of the top 500 albums of all time. This is a Mike Lockhart pick.
Who is this?
Oh my God! They're from no. Lockhart, who is it? You picked it. Calm down, get back. Ghetto people got this. Game pump. No, I don't know. It's not my pick. But it's not what I thought.
You know what I heard yesterday? This is like one of the more random things, but it was excellent. There's a song that The Weeknd did with Kenny G, and it kills. It's like, I mean, it was almost like Kenny G just sitting there like, what's he been up to? And he gets a call from, you know, probably one of the, you know, biggest guys in, you know, R&B right now or top 40. And this song absolutely kills. I forget what the name of it is, but it just came out. But Kenny G making a comeback. How about that? And he looks exactly the same poodle-haired dude as he always has, at least on the cover that I saw.
There's some show I was watching, the comedy. I think it was a comedy. And it turns out the girl was... Oh, no, it was Uncut Gems, where the girl was banging The Weeknd.
Yeah, you're right.
And
right.
Now I can't stand The Weeknd.
Oh, The Weeknd's great.
Because of that movie.
No, you'd actually like him.
He was banging it. The guy gave her, Adam Sandler had given her an apartment and been nice. And
it was an actor.
Repays that.
Not really happening in real life.
Yeah, but it's based on reality as far as I can tell. Why should that fatso get all the girls? Bert Breer is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Bert Breer, first of all, hello.
How you doing, Fred? I feel like Kenny G has done a bunch of those, hasn't he? Like I haven't heard the Weeknd compilation, but I think he's done a bunch of that sort of
stuff. With like rappers and R&B guys?
Yeah, like I feel like that's not the first time he's done something like that. Like I think it's maybe like a little bit of a second career for him. Yeah. I might be wrong. I'm not an expert in that area at all, but I don't think that's the first time I've heard of that.
Yeah, I think that if you do that, you're certain to get a few streams just out of people's curiosity. All right, Bert Breer.
Get some checks.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Bert Breer, you get that 0.001 cent per stream that Spotify offers up for the artist. All right, Bert Breer. This game on Sunday for the Patriots, mm-hmm. we're kind of sleeping on it a little bit. Is this game, the outcome of this game, because the Bills will beat the Jets. I don't think Darnold's going to play. They'd be really dumb to play him. Then that would be the only way they could possibly win. If they lose this game, because you've been on top of the Gilmore stuff, if they lose this game, does that make the Patriots sellers at the deadline?
I think it's a good question. And I know that there are a few teams that are sort of waiting to see what happens on Sunday as far as what they're going to do on the trade deadline, which is actually election day. It's November 3rd. So I think that their plan from the start, and I'm talking about going back to like the right after the loss to Tennessee in the playoff game, was this was going to be a turn the page type of year. They were going to carry $30 million in dead cap. And like they were going to sort of, the plan was at least to like hold on to their draft capital and, you know, be able to kind of reset everything in 2021. And then I think they built some momentum, you know, behind Cam Newton during camp and then early in the season. And so I think now you're sort of in this in between where it's like, are you a contender or are you still in that sort of turn the page mode? And they still have like obviously almost 2 weeks until the trade deadline, but after Sunday, we'll probably have, you know, an idea of where they stand. They play Buffalo the week after that. And so, you know, if you lose that game and Buffalo wins, now all of a sudden, you know, that Buffalo game next week is to just stay in the race, period. And maybe you take a little bit of a different approach.
All right.
Is there any kind of buzz? Because there was a story that it was Jimmy Stewart on the Felger and Mash show was saying that he had heard that the Patriots are still trying to shop Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
Are you hearing anything about that? And if so,
talk turkey.
Who's interested? I know that, you know, obviously they'd be looking for a first rounder. I know that, like, who is it? Jalen Ramsey? You end up getting two first rounders. What are you looking at for what they'd be able to pull back?
Well, like, when they shopped him, you know, in the off season, it was sort of with the idea that, like, again, this was going to be a turn the page sort of year. He was going to want more money. And, you know, I think when they gave him the raise, that the idea there was, all right, like, this is going to be his last year here. And really, it wasn't even a raise. It was just moving money forward from 2021 to 2020. And, you know, the thinking goes, and I think this is logical, if he was unwilling to play for the number that he had this year, and you're moving money up from next year to this year to kind of placate him, is he going to play for an even lower number in 2021? So when you move that money forward, I think that there was an acknowledgement. There's a good chance this is his last year as a Patriot, period. So, you know, it would make sense then if, you know, you don't think that you've got a real chance to compete for a championship, that maybe you accelerate the timetable there a little bit. And instead of, you know, parting with him after the season, you know, you move that up and you say, let's just see what we can get at least at the trade.
How much
deadline
can they get?
Well, he's not like, so lots of players have gone for first round picks plus something else of late, or first round picks, period. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jalen Ramsey, Odell Beckham, Laremy Tunsil. This is way more common. Amari Cooper, this is way more common than it used to be. Because, you know, we've seen where, you know, contract situations have become very public and, you know, players have sort of forced the issue. The difference between Gilmore and those guys, that list of names I just ran down, they're all 24, 25 years old. Steph is 30. And so I don't know that you get a one for him. Do I think somebody might come in and swing a two for him? That I could see, and that might.
You don't think he'd get a one? You don't think he'd get one first round pick?
Defending NFL Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing, guys. Like Laremy Tunsil, Jalen Ramsey. Like when the Rams and the Texans acquired those players last year, those are like cornerstones for the next 5 to 10 years. If you're bringing in Stephon Gilmore, you're bringing him in with the acknowledgement you're going to have to make a tough decision on him financially after this year. And, you know, he's already, you know, you're already on the wrong side of 30. So, like, I think age is a major factor here. I don't know that you could bring home a one for him. Teams are willing to give up ones for players. And that's, like, again, that's been way more common than it used to be in the NFL. But if you look at the age of the players that are getting moved, it's almost always somebody who's 24, 25, 26 years old and can be a building block for you long term. Stephon Gilmore would be more of like a finishing piece, right? Like he'd be the guy, if you think you're close, you bring him in with the acknowledgement that, like, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, he's probably not going to be the answer anymore.
All right, well, so how
quicker than that?
I mean, how big of a hit is that, do you think, to the Patriots? Because, I mean, the guys around him have played fairly well this season. So, I mean, as far as a drop in quality, how big do you think that is if they end up trading him?
Well, I mean, part of the whole thing, too, is like J.C. Jackson, like eventually, like, and he's played really well, right? Like, so eventually, like, you're going to have to make a decision on him. And do you pay him, you know, what, say, I don't know, Byron Jones got in Miami in the offseason, right? Like, because I think that would be probably a fair comp, right? Like, and Byron Jones got $17.5 million from the Dolphins. So, you know, there's that dynamic, too, where, like, are you ready to move forward with J.C. Jackson now as your number one corner? Well, and, you know, that would mean paying him, too.
Yeah, well, so, that's the thing, is that this move for Gilmore is beneficial to the Patriots in many ways, in that, A, you drafted these kids in Bird's right, then you got to play them and see what you have, and, B, this is the time to do it. This is the time.
No
now
question,
is the time.
No question.
Yeah. This is not the time to be adding. This is the time to be seeing what you have accumulated and seeing what
works. The thing is, like, I think, Fred, I think there's part of this is like being honest with yourself, mm-hmm. right, about where you are. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the question you have to ask yourself, because the standard here is the standard, right? Like, the standard here is to compete for championships, and it will be as long as Bill Belichick's the head coach. Like, in some ways, you do have to be honest with yourself. And this is the first time the Patriots have had to confront this question in forever, right? Which is, can you beat Baltimore in the playoffs? Can you beat Kansas City in the playoffs? I think even as, like, sideways as things were down the stretch last year, didn't we all have it in the back of our heads that maybe they could go on and run?
Yes,
even
before, of course. Because they did it the year before. They didn't look so great. Right. And then you're like, all right, all of a sudden they turned it on.
Right, they had Brady.
Do you think that can happen this year?
No.
Well, yeah, I mean.
There's four teams they won't beat in the playoffs at minimum.
So there's part of this, like, where you have to be honest with yourself, right? And if the question starts to become, like, where are we going to be in 2021 and going forward? Well, then you have to start to look at players who aren't going to be on the team in 2021 a lot differently, right? Like, because if you're looking at them, like, if you're going to compete for a championship, yes, the here and the now, Stephon Gilmore is still a great player. But if you're starting to look at it, like, with kind of a, you know, taking a long-term view to everything, part of the question has to be, is Steph Gilmore going to be here in 2020? And if he's not. Can we get more for him now? We'll be able to get for him in March. I think the answer might be yes.
Yes. And even if you don't get that first rounder, like we talked about, getting those kids' experience and also seeing what you have, again, you got, like Bert said, you have to be realistic and know that you're not in any danger of making a Super Bowl this season. And the quicker you make these decisions, the quicker you're back at that level. All right. We will be back. Lots of questions, lots of stuff going on in the NFL as we reach the trade deadline. We can also talk about how apparently there was a quippy joke by Adam Schefter that raised the ire of some people on the Twitter sphere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now, more Touch Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, there's a number of things. Coach, being my first coach in the NFL, he was just very honest. Really never beat around the bush. He was very black and white with everything they did, and that's kind of how I am, and I really appreciated that. Whether it was my first day there or when I got traded, he always, you know, shot me straight, and I think just when you're talking about just man-to-man, that's all you could really ask for at the end of the day.
My intuition is telling me there'll be better days. My intuition is telling me there'll be better days. I sit in silence and find whenever I meditate. My fears alleviate, my tears evaporate. My faith don't deviate, ideas don't have a date. But see, I'm growing and getting stronger with every breath. Bringing me closer to heaven's doors with every step. As we speak, I'm at peace, no longer scared to die.
985, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB is on the Zoom with us.
Can I just jump in real quick, Fred? We just played a promo with Chase Winovich, who, by the way, his interviews are really good on Zolak and Bertrand. And then we played a clip of Jimmy Garoppolo, and both of them said the dreaded phrase, at the end of the day. I think that it wouldn't be the worst thing if we have an athlete on our show, and before the interview even starts, just say, okay, I just want you to know that we have a policy that the words at the end of the day together in that phrase are not allowed to be said on this show anymore. I think that is there, Bert Breer, from covering athletes, is there a more overused phrase than at the end of the day? We've had guests on who have used at the end of the day in every one of their answers. And I just think that finally it needs to be acknowledged that that's something that needs to be eradicated from all athlete speak.
So, you know, like how, like, so for my job, like a lot of times, like a big piece of my work is like I have to transcribe interviews, right? Like, so there are times with coaches are worse than the athletes with that one, because there are times when I'm telling you, like, I'll like transcribe like one answer and there'll be like three or four at the end of the days in there. And it's like, you don't notice it while they're saying it, 'cause you're kind of like, you know, you're kind of like I think kind of numb to it, you know?
Sure.
You're so much, but then you like transcribe it. Like, holy crap. Like he said at the end of the day, four times in that answer.
In one answer, right? Yeah, before he even got to the next question, he's dropped several of those in there. I just think it's almost a favor to them, like, because I think they don't realize, as you said, that they're doing it and how just grating it starts to be after a while. That's a phrase that just needs to be eradicated. And maybe we do that if an athlete comes on. We just say, just as a warning, the phrase at the end of the day is not allowed to be used. And there will be severe punishments if it ends up being used during
our show.
Could
be a shock collar situation.
Sure. Why not? Yeah. Or it's like swearing. You know, after three times, you get hung up on. You know, you get one, you get two, or we'll dump you. Every time you say at the end of the day, we'll dump it. So our listeners don't have to hear that phrase anymore. All right. I wanted to ask you about, does Trent Brown have the greatest tattoo in the history of all professional athletes?
I saw that last night. I'm glad I saw that before I came on, because I think I saw that at like 9 p.m. last night. And it's not done yet, right?
Is it not done? Because it sure looks like somebody. Fred's, and this is Fred's point.
No, I think I saw a picture from last night, and the explanation, like, one of my buddies showed it to me, and the explanation I got was that it's not finished yet. So like, it was,
what's
like,
missing?
All right, it's not missing anything. The picture I saw was drawn.
Okay. But it wasn't like it was, the outline was drawn.
Okay, no,
it wasn't colored in or whatever.
It's been there for over a year. Here's the deal.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's a cheap one then.
Yeah. All right. So if you don't,
no one else would do it.
Okay. So tattoo artists, believe it or not, you know, they believe in what they do and they take it very seriously. I mean, it is like a cult. It's like a lifestyle for these people. There's a music scene, and they're all banging each other, and it's like a whole thing. And they won't do tattoos that they don't want to do. So if you'll look at Trent Brown's arm, on his arm, there's all these like really detailed tattoos, and then the majority of his upper arm is a crude outline of himself with one arm up and 244 written on it. I don't know what that means. And the other arm is around his genital area. And in front of his genital area is one woman with her back towards us and her front towards his genitals on her knees with his jersey on. And there's another woman who is passionately silhouetted with her kissing, for some reason, his hip. So he's got two chicks on their knees servicing him. And
it's right in a prominent spot too.
No, it's the majority of his upper arm. No, it's the vast majority of his upper arm.
You're going 90%. Thanksgiving dinner with that one showing,
right? You know? And so what's funny about it is, if you don't believe me on the tattoo artist, and maybe because he's famous, someone will fill it in. But if you look at the quality of the tattoos everywhere else on his body, and the quality of that one. That was a night that he was like in Panama City or something and found someone who was like, sure.
Okay, sure.
Or like one of his friends did it, because that is not a good tattoo. All right.
Well, to this point, the reason I bring up Trent Brown, it's not just obviously because of his amazing tattoo, but now there's reports coming out that, as you know, Trent Brown, he got COVID, but the whole offensive line ended up getting sent home. Right. Because of their proximity, and I know Gruden said he wasn't messing around, but now we're hearing reports that he wasn't wearing that proximity device that apparently all players are supposed to wear. It's like a tracing device, so they know who's been close to him. They know when they need to shut down the facility and when they need to just remove somebody. That's a good thing about this device, is it could actually prevent there being a complete shutdown of a team. If this person wasn't in proximity of somebody else, it's actually a really good move that they've made. So apparently
he wasn't
wearing.
Those aren't cheap either, by the way. Like, that system is like my understanding is that that's one of the most costly things they're doing is those proximity devices. It is, they can see, like, they can, the data they get is so detailed. They can tell you like who you were around, how long you were around them. It's incredible.
And it's great. It's one of the best measures that they've installed that can save this season. That way they'll know if it's just one guy who was near anybody, but he didn't wear it. So they sent home the entire offensive line. And now there's reports that all the linemen apparently were unmasked together on the sidelines during practice. And there's a bunch of regulations that seem to have been skirted. Then this is also a team that, remember, they did like meet and greets with fans and
well,
stuff.
Yeah, was it Derek Carr? Darren Waller had a charity event in Vegas for his foundation, which, like, that's great. Like, he's doing something good. But yeah, there was video that got out of, like, it almost looked like a wedding, like how they were introducing, you know, like how at a wedding they introduce the wedding party, right? Like, and they come out one by one. It almost looked like that, where there was like a stage and like they were introducing the Raiders one by one on this video. And so, every one of them was going to the stage without a mask on. It was indoors. And so
my question is,
they got a lot of crap for
that. If you're not going to punish the Titans for what they did, then when is a team ever going to get punished if the Raiders don't get punished for this?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, like, my understanding of what happened with the Titans, so they had what the league found was 75% to 80% mask compliance, which isn't good enough. They found that the contact tracing was like out of control, and they found like congregating in like hallways in the locker room in the cafeteria. And so basically their findings were that the Titans were not negligent. They were sort of lax. And there's a difference, you know, because if you're like being, you know, if you're blatantly breaking and skirting the rules, that's one thing. If you're letting your guard down, that's another. And so I think that basically at the end, the league decided it was closer to letting your guard down than it was, you know, blatantly skirting the rules. As bad as some of the rumors out there on the Titans were, what their findings were, that it wasn't that bad. And with the Raiders, it sort of feels like, I mean, this feels like the same thing where, you know, you're getting to a certain point in the season where, you know, teams might start letting their guard down. You know, going into, this is going to be interesting going forward too, guys, going into week 7, we had, and this isn't including last night's game, which the Eagles are now, you know, not one of these teams, but 10 teams had one win or less. And, you know, Bobby Carpenter, who played in the NFL for a bunch of years, brought this up to me before like during camp. He said, you wait until teams start the season 1-5 or 2-4. And these guys have been under these rules for 3 months. And now all of a sudden you've taken the carrot of like contending away from them. Like, what a problem that could be going forward. And this isn't even a bad team. Like, the Raiders aren't, the Raiders are contending right now. The Titans are obviously really, really good. So you see like some of the, I guess, teams like laying their guard down a little bit. And I think that there's a feeling out there that this is going to get that much worse, because you've got teams now that are legitimately falling out of contention altogether.
Has anyone gotten really sick?
That's the thing, right? Like, that's the part of it that, like, to my understanding, there haven't been any hospitalizations. Now, I would say the one thing that that was sort of the one story that I heard that was sort of interesting was there was at least one player who, you know, was on the fence about opting out because he was found to have had that myocarditis, the heart condition that caused the Big Ten to shut down in the summer.
Right.
So I think with a lot of these guys, that's sort of the concern. Is that, like, because I guess bigger people are more susceptible to that. And obviously in the NFL, there are a lot of very big people. That this could be like a side effect of these guys getting it. And there was at least one, and I think more than one case of, you know, the doctors finding this in these guys after they got COVID. You know, so that's something that's sort of like an underlying concern in the NFL. But as far as I know, like, there haven't been hospitalizations among NFL players, at least since the start of training camp.
Because Tlaib said it, that's going to be a big deal. If one of these fatso linemen gets caught up and gets on one of these ventilators.
Well, the heart is a big deal, yeah. Like, the heart thing is, like, that's obviously, I mean, you know, like, that was a big reason why, at least they said it was at the time, that the Big Ten, like, initially postponed their season. And I can tell you that there were even teams that worked with players contractually and set things up in their contracts to sort of protect them in case that became a problem for them going into this year. That's how big an issue it was.
Well, the FDA approved whatever the hell Trump was on, so maybe they have some sort of remdesivir. So maybe there is some sort of treatment. And Lord knows the football players would get it. So, all right, when we come back, we will move on from that. We will, by the way, the Schefter tweet was ridiculous. He was saying, Hey, November 3rd is a really important day.
It's the draft day.
Yeah. Trade deadline.
And this woman that was a talk show host went crazy saying how he was belittling the election, or not belittling the election. He was minimizing the importance.
Basically called him a racist.
It was systematic racist.
Right.
Yes. She went into a whole thing about how he was racist. Just based on that tweet, by the way, there was no like, hey, well, you did this, this, and this.
Right.
It was like systematic racism, blah, 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 blah. And then you said, my dear, you are trying to get a talk show the wrong way because I'm staying away from you. All you are doing is raising a ruckus.
Yeah.
All right. So when we come back, we can talk about the who could get moved at the trade deadline. I mean, this is an exciting time. There's a lot of very, very bad teams and a lot of very mediocre teams, not many great teams. So it could be a feeding frenzy for these great teams, and we could have a super team maybe. And remember, 9 times 2, 1, 2, 90, 18. All right, we'll be right back. Hear the headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Coming up next at 10, Sports Talk while you're on the clock. Zolak and Bertrand. Right now, it's Toucher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sport. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Because we're still here.
Acing. I ain't trying to waste this. Took a long time crying. Crying ain't a crime. I got my mom. She passed away. My dad, he ain't alive. Before they murdered Fudge, I crave for more time. Had y'all on my mind all week. I missed the last. They say a better tomorrow. It's the sacrifice the calf. Keep that cow in the pasture. Knife in the drawer. Spend a long 40 days. It's gonna take 40 more. Make it through losing love. Sort of like rock fuel. I made the limits. I thought that I'd run the gas out.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. All these songs, for the most part, are available. I made a playlist finally.
The new songs that Mike added in are part of the playlist too, or they still have to be added?
No, because I don't. They're Mike's songs. They're not my songs.
Okay. By the way, I know you like De La Soul. Obviously, there's they just did a new song with this group called Potato Head People. That's really good. Like they're jumping around, and I know that when do they? I don't think they've. I think that was their last new album, but they keep doing little projects with people.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I think you might like it.
Yeah, they got screwed royally on samples. They have on the 3 Feet High and Rising, I think, or it might be on the De La Soul Is Dead. There's a like Man for Man. There's like a some band like that. There's like a 2 second sample, and the band sued them. And that's why those albums were not available for streaming and all that. Tommy Boy would not release them because they sued. And so De La Soul said, we're not going to use samples anymore. So they just got the guy from Blur and a bunch of musicians, and they put him in a studio for a couple weeks.
It's brilliant. I don't know why more rap artists don't do that. Create your own background music instead of sampling. You know, create your own, and that way you own it, and what you get is a product like the De La Soul one, that last album, which is fantastic.
You'll miss out on everything that made Puffy's solo album so wonderful.
Right, because, listen, it is fairly easy to just put on Every Breath You Take and rap over the top of it,
which is basically
what they did.
Or you could be like the St. Lunatics and just take Back in Black and go, woof! And you're like, wow, how'd you think of that?
Bert, there's an issue at wide receiver with the Patriots. We know this. And let's say that they come out against the 49ers and they stomp them, and there's a lot more motivation for this team. There's confidence that maybe they think they can do something, and they want to add some pieces at the trade deadline. Stupid. I've heard Odell Beckham Jr. out there. The Julio Jones thing is still being flipped around. Heck, even people are throwing Antonio Brown's name out there, and I just want to say, do you remember how he went out?
No. And he wouldn't come here. But here's the deal.
But what's realistic for the Patriots?
Let me first say this, is that, Bert, and you can tell me if you agree with me or not, because I would like to make a statement, is that if this team adds any veteran that and they give up future assets for any veteran, this is a team that should be acquiring low-priced talent. This is a team that should be acquiring draft picks. You don't want to pay these veterans right now. You want to be in a situation where you're financially responsible and that you have talent that you are under control of for years without having to overpay. You want the opposite of a high price free agent right now. You want a kid that you control for a few years. But Bert, your opinions. Do you see them?
That's what I'm saying. You have to be honest with yourself, yeah. Right? Like that's why I think like it's really important for Bill Belichick and Nick Caserio, and I'm sure they're doing this constantly. But you know, sit down and like, all right, like, can we compete for a championship in 2020? And if the answer is no, do not give up your draft capital. Like, especially when you've got the example of what happened last year with Mohamed Sanu, right? Like, where you gave up a second round pick, and God, could you have used that second round pick, right?
Yes, you could.
Because you have not drafted well over the last 4 or 5 years, which is why you're in this predicament to begin with. You're here because generally the really good teams, you guys can look this up, generally the really good teams have a lot of good players who are in their third and fourth years. Why? Yes. Well, the reason why is because those guys are at the point where they're old enough to be like veteran players on your team, but they're still not, you know, like a lot of those guys still aren't paid yet, right?
The Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers, for example.
Right. You've got guys who are making nothing, who are giving you veteran production because they're still on their rookie deals.
Yes.
And quite honestly, like that's part of the reason why the Patriots are older. Right. Like, and I brought this up on the midday show on Wednesday. You guys remember that Super Bowl team in 2014, right? Look at like some of the players and who are behind them. Right. So Shane Vereen was there. You had James White behind him. Sebastian Vollmer was the right tackle. You had Marcus Cannon behind him. The corners were Revis and Browner. You had Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler behind him. They almost had like this farm system of players coming up behind the guys who were their frontline guys in that team. Like, even Chandler Jones had a Trey Flowers behind him, I think, at that point, right? So, like, I think it's part of the reason why you've gotten older in the first place is because you don't have people to replace Patrick Chung, Devin McCourty. That's why, like in some cases, the reason you've gotten old is because you've had to hang on to guys because you don't have their successor in-house. And so, to me, like, I look at that, and it's – I wouldn't be giving up, like, anything of value in next year's draft, because I would say we have to get younger. We have to get more of that sort of talent in the building. And the only way we're going to do it is by having a lot of draft.
Yeah. So and that's what people forget about. That's what people forget about when they say, well, I want to get an Allen Robinson because he's got, you know, time left or something like that. Is that you don't want that time. That's the opposite of what you want. You don't want to be paying a receiver that kind of money over. You don't want to get hamstrung with that contract.
So what you're saying is this is the receiving core that they're going to stick with. You don't think that they're going to make it. Listen, I don't disagree with you.
I'll give you guys some names. Like, if you want some names of, like, who's out there, and you can tell me whether or not you think it's worth it. Like, A.J. Green would be, like, maybe you take the moonshot, but then you got to pay him for the rest of the year. Wow. And you can't sign him past this year because he's on the franchise tag. So, like, if you're bringing in A.J. Green, it's for this year and this year only. Is that worth doing?
No.
Okay. All right. So I'll go further down the list. Other contract year guys. Kenny Stills.
No.
Will Fuller.
No.
Alshon Jeffrey.
I didn't even know he still played.
Well, and that's the reason why you might be able to steal him.
That's what I'm saying. Like Zach Ertz was floating around out there. Now he can't be traded.
Well, you drafted two tight ends. Can we stop with the tight ends? They're going to go sign a free agent tight end or trade for a free agent tight end. You drafted two tight ends this year. What are you, out of your mind?
No.
You're going to go, hang on. anyone who says that they should go out and sign a veteran tight end, then what they're going to go, oh, well, five games into the season, we really screwed up. Boy, oh, boy, you took two tight ends in the draft. Two kids from major colleges.
They're going to draft another one next year. Watch.
Well, good. Yep. That makes sense, at least. Yep. You know, draft some kid in the fifth round.
The kid from Penn State. They got to draft one of those guys.
We use two draft picks on tight ends, and we're going to go get Zach Ertz, or we're going to go get O.J. Howard. What? You whiffed. You're willing to say you whiffed this early into it? Go screw. I mean, do you follow football? Do you have any idea of how that you build a team? These are idiotic statements. So
that's my but my thing is
not you.
Like, no. But like my thing is like, all right, like you go to the Jets and ask for Jamison Crowder. What does that really solve?
Yeah, good.
What does that really solve? Right, like nothing. That. It's like go get Golden Tate from the Giants. Well, yeah, like maybe you're marginally better this year, but if you're not competing for a championship, is it worth flipping the pick to begin with?
No,
and that's my whole thing is like really the foundational problem with this team. Like, we can talk about Cam and Brady until we're blue in the face. That's not the foundational problem here. The foundational problem here is that they had a rough stretch in the draft. And if you look at it, here's the amazing thing. There are only four homegrown first-round picks on their roster, and one of them is Devin McCourty. There are four homegrown first-round picks on their entire roster. And that is N'Keal Harry, Sony Michel, Isaiah Wynn, and Devin McCourty. And that is it.
And you whiffed on two of those.
Like, think about that. Think about that. That's the first round talent.
Yeah. And two of those
homegrown
are
first round talent.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing is like that. Like, the problem right now isn't Cam Newton. All right. Like, the problem with the team right now is not the quarterback position. The problem with the team is that they didn't draft well for a few years, and now it's catching up with them because that's what happens. Like, eventually, like striking out in 16 and 17 and like in the draft, like that's catching up to you now because this is when those guys would be hitting their prime and would still be on rookie contracts, would still be affordable. And so like, that's where you have the issue. And I don't know, to me, it's like, if you felt like, I know people are so conditioned in this area.
They don't know.
Like they don't understand the way the rest of the league works. It's like, you don't understand. Like this is not always like you don't always need to be buying when the trade deadline comes. And I think that they've really kind of hit this crossroads where it's like you have to be honest with yourself. And for the long-term health of the franchise and where you guys are going to be in a year or two, you really have to look at the idea that maybe, like, and I'm not saying you go to the locker room and say, like declare to the team the season's over, but maybe you subtly have to punt on this year at this point. And I think that's why Sunday games.
Well, then let me ask you this. Do you have any hope that N'Keal Harry will turn into anything? Because, I mean, as you said, these first-round picks don't look great.
But
and
you
the N'Keal Harry one, as time goes on, looks more and more like a bust.
But you don't whiff on a first-round pick and then turn around and sign some guy for $1 billion when you're out.
I'm saying if they're going to make that decision to not do anything, like taking a look at what they have right now, do you have any faith that A, N'Keal Harry will turn into anything, and B, that you're going to get anything close to what Julian Edelman used to be back, because he sure doesn't look that way right now?
Receiver's one of those spots where you want to give it 3 years. It is a hard spot to transition to in the NFL. The problem N'Keal Harry has, there are a lot of like studs that were drafted behind him at his position in his draft year, right? Like,
it's Debo insane. You look at the people who came after him and... Right. I mean, like, when you watch
Debo Samuel,
but in fairness, doing, you're like, oh my God.
In fairness, these are all underground guys that didn't play on a big stage.
No, who would have known
Debo Samuel would have been good? I mean, we never saw that kid play.
Well, that was the thing is, like, Debo Samuel to me was the one everyone thought.
My daughter knows who he is.
The Patriots. Everyone thought he was a fit for the Patriots that year, too. And, like, so somehow they take Harry over him. That doesn't make him look good. A.J. Brown, 51st pick in that year's draft.
Who knew about
Mecole Hardman, Kansas City, he goes 56th.
DK Metcalf, yeah,
fourth overall. I mean, you looked at Deontay Johnson, 66th overall. So that's part of the problem is, like, on one side, you want to give receivers time to develop because it is a hard position to transition to in the NFL. The problem is more and more NFL teams are doing what they need to do to accommodate these guys, and guys who are drafted behind him in the same year are really productive right now. And I think some of the criticism of Harry coming into the draft, like how much of that's coming true?
Well,
like the criticism, the criticism
wasn't the best receiver on his team. Yeah, yeah, that he's big can't get off the line. Yeah,
right. All that stuff seems to be coming home to roost. And so, like, I want to give him time, but the signs right now aren't great when you stack him up against the guys he was drafted
with. And it's funny because you listen to just people in the media even, and they're like, oh, you know, they should do this. And they, like, part of your job in the media is to follow other teams. I mean, this New England Patriots team is a different team now. It's not a team that's going to challenge for a Super Bowl. Every time you had Brady, you had a chance. And you're right, Bert, and I think we all agree that last year you thought they would beat Tennessee. I mean, last year you thought that there was a chance. With Brady, you had that chance. Now you don't. And it's you have to control talent. Like Bert said, you draft talent, you control them at that price in that window, and you saw Seattle's defense. Now Seattle's defense sucks, but they had to make decisions. You can't keep everyone, and da-da-da-da-da. What you do is when you have that window of these young players that you still control, then you can sign the free agent. Then you can make the trade. You don't make the trade when you're a 500 team.
Yeah. Kansas City was a perfect example of it, right? Like, Kansas City had Patrick Mahomes on a rookie contract. They had a bunch of other young guys on the cheap. And what do they do? Okay, like, now we're close. We're going to go sign Tyrann Mathieu. We're going to trade for Frank Clark. We're going to strike while the iron's hot.
Yes.
Look at the Niners. Like, the Niners, like, okay, like, they felt like they were getting close. Like, and you look at who was on their roster at the time, right? Like, so Nick Bosa, first-round pick. Solomon Thomas, first-round pick. Eric Armstead, first-round pick. DeForest Buckner, first-round pick. You know, Joe Staley had been like an older first-round pick for them. If you look at the way these teams are built, there's a ton of homegrown talent on the teams, which gives you a ton of flexibility to kind of bring guys in from other places. It's just when you're not when you aren't developing the talent in-house the way that these teams are, these problems, I mean, no one's immune to them. And so, like, I think that's, you know, again, like, the Patriots have had their ups and downs like everybody else.
But they had a quarterback that was unreal and that could.
And they had a quarterback who could cover all of it up.
Yep.
Right. Like, so, like, when they weren't drafting well, they could cover it up. They don't have that anymore. And like these things take a couple years to really manifest themselves. And the Patriots are right now paying the price for not drafting very well a few years
ago. Yeah. And it's also where you don't want to be. You don't want to be a 500 team. You want to clear this up as soon as possible. Bert Breer.
By the way, one more thing, guys, like, just so you know, like, so, and I'll run down this really, really quick on Steph Gilmore. This is why they won't be able to get a first round pick from. I don't think 10 guys have been traded over the last 2 years for first round picks. Brandon Cooks was 24. Khalil Mack was 27. Amari Cooper was 24. Odell Beckham was 26. Frank Clark was 25. Laremy Tunsil was 25. Minka Fitzpatrick was 22. Jalen Ramsey was 24. DeForest Buckner was 25. Stephon Diggs was 26. Those are the types of guys that go for first-round picks. When you're at or beyond 30 years old, it's very, very hard to get a great return for a player.
Yeah, I mean, Gilmore would be just an absolute luxury. I mean,
that's all right. The Patriots would have blown a first-round pick anyway.
Yeah, they could get another Nikhil Harry.
I feel much better now.
Yeah. They could get Tavon Wilson in the second round.
Awesome.
All right, we'll be right back in just a moment. Thank you, Bert.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.